Good afternoon. Happy Tuesday. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hope you're having yourself a great Tuesday. You know, Tuesday is one of those days. If I could be hacky for a few seconds. Tuesday is one of those days, to quote Jerry on Seinfeld, you don't really feel Tuesday. I mean, Tuesday's there, it's blah, but, you know, you're removed from the weekend and you're not close to the next weekend. But you know what? We're going to entertain you. We're going to inform you for the next 3 hours, and we're glad to have you along. Obviously, the continued actions from the Texas Democrats in Illinois, as we talked about yesterday, and they are holding true. And the question is, just how long can these Democrats stay in Illinois? You know, I heard someone say yesterday, well, they, you know, eventually they're going to have to come back to Texas, which is a Bowling Green is a college in the MAC. Bowling for Soup song. They're going to eventually have to come back to Texas, and they're going to not get their way. And this will be a colossal time of a colossal waste of everyone's time. That includes the taxpayers of Texas, J.P. Pritzker, and whoever funded the private jet to and from Illinois. So it's all just a political, you know, it's all for the attention. It's all for the spotlight. If the Democrat Party is good at one thing, they're good at being actors. And that's what this all is. It's just a show. It's just acting. They're not going to get their way, and they're going to pout about it. But, you know, you look at states across America. I mean, they act like Texas is the only state that is looking to gerrymander their districts because of the way the state is run. But that's not true. I mean, there are states, Democrat-run states, that have no Republicans in Congress. Blue states with zero Republican House seats. Massachusetts, Rhode Island, to be fair, Rhode Island, I believe, only has two seats. Vermont, which I believe also only has two seats. New Hampshire, Hawaii, New Mexico, Connecticut, Delaware. Delaware only has one seat, so, I mean, it is what it is. But those are full Democrat control. And again, I mean, look at the states like Massachusetts and Connecticut, these multi-district. I'm not going to point to Rhode Island and Delaware, right? I'm going to be fair. Those are one or two district states. I mean, you can only draw so many ways. But, I mean, Democrats do get as many Democratic seats out of their fully controlled states. I told you in New York. I mean, the governor wanted it even more ridiculous than it is now. Here in New York State, the Court of Appeals said, no, that's not constitutional. And then all of a sudden, the judges appointed get more and more liberal. So here's the thing. The Democrats, they're going to make a big show about it. They're going to waste everyone's time. They're going to waste taxpayer dollars in Texas. And at the end of the day, they're going to get the districts that the Republicans want. So I don't know how long they're going to stay in Illinois. It'll be very interesting to see how long this charade goes on. Because if I was a Texas, if I lived in a blue district, I would be like, what are you doing? This isn't democracy. You're not standing up for what you believe. You're getting out. You're trying to stop democracy. And again, I mean, Trump, you know, is very popular in the state of Texas, which is funny, right? Because for my entire life, I have heard how Texas is going to be in play this year. We're looking at the numbers, and Texas is going to be in play. And it just never happens, right? Republicans win the Senate seats. The state has not gone purple like North Carolina. And you know, I mean, again, it's getting more and more popular for Trump, even with the influx of people from California. And, you know, you look at Florida as well. If we're talking about people who've moved down, The problem in New York State, where I live, is the people who are leaving tend to be more conservative. So, yeah, they're getting out. They're getting out of the disastrous policies that have ruined places like Niagara Falls, New York, one of the most embarrassing. I mean, you were given a gift, right? Talk about how Democrats just their policies leading to destruction. They were given a gift called Niagara Falls. And let me tell you, it's run down. There's very little to do. You look across the falls to Canada and you go, oh my God, what's that beautiful place over there? It's sad. It's pathetic. It's decades of Democrat leadership. So yeah, conservatives leave New York, make it more blue and go to a place like Florida. And that's why Florida went with the help of Ron DeSantis. Florida went from a swing state every presidential election to a solid red state. And that's what's going on in Texas. And you know what? Just like the solid blue states can do, when they want to draw up a map, they're going to get as many red districts, or the blue states are going to get as many blue districts. Again, look at Illinois. There's a district that looks like it's a river. You got to look and go, oh, that's not a river. That's a district. So, you know, I would say, again, if it was someone in my district, stop crying, stop whining, stop trying to get the camera. I mean, there's a camera set up for CNN in the J.P. Pritzker Hotel, because every time I flip over there, it's their panel, right? They always have a panel, no matter what the show is, and they're talking to a Democratic legislator from Texas. They've talked to one conservative, obviously, and our friend Scott Jennings. It's been one Republican legislator from Texas and Scott Jennings. That's about the right-wing viewpoint, and Schermichael, that you're going to get on CNN. But they've had a camera set up in that hotel in Illinois. But at the end of the day, it's nothing but a waste of time and money, right? It's like Cory Booker. Cory Booker screamed on the Senate floor for 20-some hours, and Chuck Schumer congratulated him. Congratulated him for what? You didn't accomplish anything. Nothing got done. You wasted everybody's time. C-SPAN, the C-SPAN bill that day was higher than ever before because they had to remain live all through the night. So you're not accomplishing anything. And these Texas Democrats aren't accomplishing anything. And I can guarantee you that once this goes by, there's more important things when they get back in the session. But you know what? Be there. Voice your displeasure on the floor. But be present. You're not representing your district states away, thousands of miles away. And by the way, I'd be saying the same thing if it was Republicans. You cannot represent your district from outside the state. And I'll be consistent on this. I'll say it for Democrats and I'll say it for Republicans. You want to represent your district, then you got to be in the Capitol. That's how you voice your displeasure and you voice your opinion. But the Democrats have turned politics into, well, they know they can get the cameras and they know the media will be on their side. So they are focused on getting the spotlight, making a big deal, right? Getting everyone to talk about it. But like I said, what's that going to gain you? At the end of the day, what you're trying to push back against is actually going to happen. And you've wasted a ton of time and a ton of taxpayers' money. And again, whoever paid for that private jet, which I'm guessing somehow taxpayers paid for a little bit of it, right? It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. We got a great show planned for you today. Brianna Lehman from The Federalist is going to be here. She's going to be talking about these Texas Democrats going to Illinois and the gerrymandering. We also have Corey Brewer. He is going to be talking about, she's going to be talking about her group just released some new help for parents who want to opt their children out of DEI classes in school. Very important stuff. And then later in the show, we'll be talking to Scott Fitzpatrick. He is the Missouri auditor. There's an audit of the St. Louis Public Schools. He'll tell us about that. And Jane Duker. She is a local attorney, former candidate for Democratic nomination for St. Louis County Executive. And we're going to ask her the very important question of what is the path of the Democratic Party? Because Elizabeth Warren says it's further left. Isn't that amazing? Hey, we weren't, you know, the problem with New York City, we weren't liberal enough. And that's crazy if you've spent any time looking at the politics of New York City. We'll talk about all that and much, much more. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we bring in Brianna Lyman from The Federalist. Brianna, good afternoon.
How are you?
Doing all right. You know, keeping our eyes on these Democrats that have fled to Illinois. You know, obviously, I want to focus in on the spotlight put now on Illinois. But, you know, it's been a few days now. Do we know who funded the $100,000 private jet?
Right now, not sure who's funding that, who's funding the, I think it's $500 a day that they are supposed to be paying for essentially abandoning their constituents.
But, you know, don't get in your car and drive to get groceries. You have to walk to save the environment, but we can hop on this private jet.
Yeah, the hypocrisy is astounding from Democrats in all respects to this abandonment of their duties.
Now, you wrote in The Federalist about Texas Democrats as they're whining over gerrymandering. They ironically went to Illinois. And just looking at the map of Illinois, it is it's humorous. I mean, it could be a comedy act just looking at the districts in Illinois.
Yeah, so Illinois has 17 congressional districts, and 14 of them are held by Democrats. Now, that would make sense if, you know, maybe 75% of the state went blue. But it actually is that Democrats can't even meet a 60% popular vote threshold in Illinois. So it's not even close to why there should be 14 Democrat-held seats and only three Republicans. But the reason being is there used to be five Republican-held seats until, guess what? Democrats gerrymandered the state and lost two Republican seats. So for all their cries and screeching about democracy and, you know, we need to make sure everybody has fair representation, they certainly don't mind the fact that Republicans are not fairly represented in Illinois, among many other Democratic states.
No, no, they don't. They don't want to look at Illinois. They don't want to look at New York State and hypocrite herself, Kathy Hochul, where now I did not know this. This is funny. I live in New York and I didn't realize that some of these Democrats also went to Albany to meet with the governor. And, you know, New York itself, I mean, Hochul wanted it even worsely gerrymandered, but was pushed back by the courts.
Yeah. I also live in New York. And, you know, back in 2014, I wasn't able to vote at this time, but New Yorkers had voted to pass the constitutional amendment, which created the Independent Redistricting Commission. So that is a bipartisan committee that is tasked with drawing new maps every year. And lo and behold, Democrats did not like the maps from the IRC last year because they didn't favor Democrats enough, clearly. So what did Democrats do? They scrapped the maps that New Yorkers voted 10 years ago to have drawn by this group of people and instead put forward their own Democrat-led maps. And then you go back 3 years and courts had to actually shoot down Democrats' mid-year redistricting proposal in 2022 because they were so skewed toward Democrats. But again, great place for Texan Democrats to flee to.
Yeah, for sure. And I love this quote from one of the members of the Texas House. We're not here to play political games. I think this is a great example of a political game. That's exactly what they're doing.
Right. And if they weren't, you know, actually playing a political game, they would have gone to a different state, right? They wouldn't have gone to a state that is extremely gerrymandered. And the reason it shows their hypocrisy is because if they actually cared about gerrymandering, they would be opposed to any state, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that has gerrymandered districts. But it turns out that's not what they care about. They just care about trying to maintain any semblance of power.
And, I mean, at the end of the day, this is all just a waste of time, a waste of money for whoever's paying for that private jet, a waste of money for J.P. Pritzker who's putting them up in his hotel. Because, I mean, regardless of how long they wait and don't represent their district, the gerrymandering is going to pass. I mean, Texas is going to get their way. They have full control.
Yeah, I mean, not only will Texas get their way, but I assume this is going to make its way up to the Supreme Court eventually because of these coalition districts. You know, under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, a lot of states thought they had to cobble together different minority groups to create that 50% threshold and therefore make, you know, a minority-majority coalition district. And what the Fifth Circuit Court said is actually, no, that's not what Section 2 says. So now you have a bunch of people saying, well, what does that mean for my state? So I think this will probably get up to the Supreme Court, and Democrats are going to soon realize they're going to be out of a lot of seats because of the way they've been drawn.
Yeah, and, you know, back to New York for a second. I mean, again, the hypocrisy, not only with the gerrymandering, but, I mean, New York is sitting on probably two extra congressional districts because of all the illegals that Kathy Hochul has let in.
Oh, yeah. Same with California. You know, Gavin Newsom has spent the past 48 hours tweeting nonstop about this. And it's like your state has so many illegal aliens that you've skewed the apportionment, not only for congressional seats, but the Electoral College. And so if Democrats want to talk about making this an even fair playing field, I agree. Let's have the conversation. Let's start with getting rid of illegal aliens in the census.
Yeah, it would be, you know, I to me, that's just common sense. But obviously, you know, Democrats, I mean, they're going to push the other way. They don't, not only do they want the illegals there, by the way, some that were housed in a hotel right behind the studio I'm broadcasting from, but they want them to be able to vote. I mean, let's be honest, that's the next move.
Absolutely. I mean, Yvette Clark, who is a Democratic rep, she said it, I think it was 2021, that she needs more migrants, illegal aliens in her district because it helps with redistricting purposes. So they know exactly what they're doing. So when people say, well, illegal aliens aren't voting, maybe they're not voting in large numbers, but they're certainly skewing the election outcomes by taking fair representation away from Americans who are living in districts that are small but fully comprised of American citizens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these Democrats, I'm telling you, just from a New York point of view, I mean, it seems like some Democrats, they care more about the illegal immigrants. Let's make sure there's $2.5 billion in the budget for them than they do, you know, the hardworking, everyday average citizen.
Yeah, and I would contend it's not that they care specifically about the illegal aliens and, you know, their needs. They just care about what they can use the illegal aliens for. And like we said, apportionment, electoral college, and even potentially down the line, if, you know, amnesty is given to these folks, future voters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I gotta ask you, you know, keeping your eye on this situation, what do you have an over under of how many days these Texas Democrats will stay out of Texas?
I'm going to go with next Tuesday because I think with Paxton and Abbott taking a harder stance today, they're going to have a few days to either shape up or ship out. And I think they're going to make that decision. It's a costly move what they're doing.
Is Tuesday the deadline? What's the next benchmark in the from the governor?
I'm not sure if the next benchmark is from the governor. My personal deadline is Tuesday just because I think they'll let the media ride out for the rest of the week. And then Monday, the fanfare will stop and they'll be back by Tuesday.
I got to ask you something. Since you said you were in New York, I got to ask you this question. Kathy Hochul, you know, she's Buffalo's own, and she's being primaried by her lieutenant governor. Why aren't we hearing any more about that?
You know, I actually wondered the exact same thing. I think they're trying to deflect from infighting within the Democratic Party and try to turn their attention to just Republican versus Democrat, when the fact remains a lieutenant governor challenging the governor is probably more of a closer battle and harder won battle for Hochul.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Kathy Hochul, she's been embarrassing Western New York for my lifetime. I've been around for 37 years. So for 37 years, she's been embarrassing Western New York. And, you know, can't go talk New York without Mamdani. Do you think Adams or Cuomo will put their ego aside and actually step out of this race? Or is Mamdani just going to walk through the finish line?
I think if they want to distinguish themselves as a statesman versus a politician, then one of them, and I think it should be Adams, should step aside, because at the end of the day, this is about New York City. And if they claim to love New York City as much as they do, and this isn't about just having power, they should work together and figure out who's dropping out and what are we doing to get voters to turn out.
Never would I think that I would say something like, wow, it would be better if Cuomo won. Not that it would be great. I just said better. I don't want my words to be taken out of context. I said better, not great.
It's unfortunately the lesser of two evils.
Hey, Brianna, great talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That is Brianna Lyman from The Federalist. You can read her current piece there on this, the Texas Democrats fleeing to Illinois, where gerrymandering is king. And again, if you look at that map of Illinois, I mean, it is the district that looks like a river. I'm telling you, it's laughable. It's Carrot Top could use that in one of his stand up gigs over at the Lux. When we come back, we're talking with Corey Brewer. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. Back, it is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. For those watching on the video, I had to go with the hat. I needed to cut my hair like a week ago, but you know, you get busy. Next thing you know, your hair looks even worse. You know, I was told the older I get, the less my hair will grow. Not that I want to lose my hair, but I am finding my hair to grow just as it did 15 years ago. Anyway, that's a discussion for later in the show. We are joined this segment by Corey Brewer, Education Counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, WILL. Corey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So you guys released a new model for parents and schools. I'm sorry, parents and students to deal with schools. This following the Muhammad Taylor case. So tell us what the objective is heading into the 2025 school year.
Yes, we did just yesterday. We have a template opt-out form for parents to customize, and we have a notice template for teachers, a model school board policy, and the goal of all of this is to help with compliance with this brand new United States Supreme Court precedent. If you've been following parents' rights from a legal perspective, you know they go all the way back to 1925, a case called Pierce versus Society of Sisters. And just this summer, at the end of June, actually, the court reaffirmed that parents have a right to direct the religious upbringing of their children, and that right follows the children even into a public school classroom. So if parents have religious objections, they may opt out for religious reasons of certain controversial content for their children.
So, I mean, this is letting the parents, right, this decision, letting the parents have a little bit, as you said, control over what their kids are seeing. Because for the last, I would say, 5-6 years, you know, minus the time kids were learning on Zoom during the pandemic, a lot of parents had no idea just how, what's the word I'm looking for, indoctrinated their children were getting.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And this case originated in a part of Maryland where it's one of the most religiously diverse parts of the country. So you ultimately, the school board was honoring opt-out requests, and then they decided that they weren't going to do that anymore, and they weren't even going to give parents notice of when these controversial topics were taught in the classroom. And you had parents from all different religious backgrounds, Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, Christian, they all came together and said, wait, we as parents, actually, we have First Amendment free exercise rights. We have constitutional rights as parents to raise our children how we believe they should be raised, including their religious upbringing. And you, school, public school, are taking that right away from us. You are violating our constitutional rights. And the court agreed. So now this decision applies in every state. If a parent has a religious reason for wanting to opt out of certain content, in the Mahmoud versus Taylor case, it was LGBTQ storybooks read to very young children. But really, this applies beyond that. If there is sexually explicit content, if there is content that teaches individuals have a privilege or are different because of their race inherently, it could apply to any of that. In our template letter on our website, for parents includes a variety of those different categories.
What's some of the stuff that you guys have heard of or seen that, you know, students are seeing that parents might have no ideas being brought to them in the classroom?
Yeah, thank you. I'll give two quick examples, and one actually comes from the Mahmoud versus Taylor case. And some people might say, oh, well, these were just books being read to children. What's the big deal? But the teachers in that case were actually trained to silence dissent, and they had to undergo professional development training. So if a child, for example, would say, you know, hey, Mrs. Smith, I don't really think that a boy can be a girl. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Can you tell me more about that? I don't think that's right. The teachers were trained to say, that's hurtful. That's a hurtful comment, and really shut down any dissent. Another example, and this is another thing that's going on all around the country. It's not exactly what the case was about, but we're seeing it in schools all over the country, are these gender secrecy policies, where if a child wishes to transition to another gender, even socially, so changing just the name and pronouns and the gender that they go by at school, many schools, if a parent does not want that to happen, or even without telling the parent at all, will allow that minor child to transition to the other gender while they're in school. And while that's not what the case was about, it's hard to see if the court said, yes, it violates parents' religious rights to not be able to opt out of religious classroom instruction. It's hard to see that a court would allow these gender secrecy policies, especially for families with religious objections.
Yeah, you know, to me that because I've heard of that in the local districts where I'm broadcasting from in Buffalo, New York. You know, where kids could, you know, at school they change their name, they are identifying as different gender, and like I'm sorry if my fourth grader is doing that. I think it's the school's job to let me know what my child's doing so I can have, as the parent, a conversation with them.
Right. And I think the majority of parents do feel that way. They want to be involved. And parents ultimately are the individuals that have their child's best interests at heart. Of course, there might be some really terrible, tragic situations out there. I don't want to discount that. But more often than not, almost all of the time, the parents have their child's best interests at heart. And for a government entity like a public school to shut parents out of that conversation, and then in some instances, even totally go against their wishes or deceive them when they're around, not only is that, I think, inappropriate and immoral, but we at Will believe that violates parents' constitutional rights.
Now, for the opt-out letter, is that something you send with your child on the first day of class?
You can send it at any time if you're a parent. So all you have to do, if you want to use our version or take a look at it, it's will-law.org/parents. And it is a customizable letter. You can insert your child's name, grade, and then according to your religious beliefs, which categories of instruction would you like to opt your child out of? And all that will do then is generate a form that you can download and either print, send it to your child's school, or send it to them in an email, and just send them that request. Be proactive. And I would ask for a response to, you know, confirm that they received it, and hopefully they honor it. If they don't, talk to a lawyer, contact someone like us at Will, and let us know.
You know, I love what you guys are doing, but a lot of this stuff that I've heard about, you know, you said the case that went to the Supreme Court and some of the other stuff, I feel we shouldn't need a letter. We should just not be teaching these things. I mean, kids should be going to school to teach the basics that, you know, I learned in the late 90s and early 2000s. Like, this shouldn't even be in the curriculum.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. I think a lot of parents agree with you, and grandparents across the country, too, that are following this. And one of the things that we will be watching for is if we get parents around the country opting out of this controversial, objectionable content based on their religious beliefs, will schools then decide not to infuse it in every, I mean, we're seeing some of these schools that are talking about LGBTQ, what has been known as critical race theory, or teaching that individuals should be treated different or have inherent privilege based on the color of their skin, handing out resources based on the color of their skin. Are we going to still see this in English, in math, in classes where parents would be surprised to see that this content is making its way into the classroom? Or are schools going to maybe, hopefully, understand that, hey, we want our children to know how to read and do math, and we would love to see children be able to write proficiently and get back to some of those basics, you know, civic education. These are the things that children, we want to set them up for success when they're done with school. And a lot of parents, a lot of grandparents would love to see schools getting back to that. I hope this Mahmoud versus Taylor case, this new precedent from the United States Supreme Court, is going to be a big step in the right direction for seeing those things, but we'll have to kind of watch and see how it plays out.
And like I said, I love what you guys are doing. I love the tools that you have put together for teachers and for parents. But, you know, this is I'm not trying to be Mr. Negative, but, you know, you have a template of notice letter for teachers. I just feel the teachers who are teaching this kind of stuff, they're not going to follow any kind of protocol, because they want to teach their opinion, their way of life as fact and as everyone should follow.
That's possible. This is why I really think parents need to be the ones to be proactive. Of course, teachers, I think if they want to respect parents' constitutional rights, and not only that, but also limit any risk of liability now that we have this new precedent, they should err on the side of transparency and err on the side of giving parents notice when these controversial topics will be taught in the classroom. As you said, Joe, some of them are not going to do that, and that's just the way it is. We know that that's the reality. But if parents get out ahead of this and request an opt-out, that I think is their best tool right now, and the law is on their side, especially for religious parents. And then, as I mentioned, if it's not honored, talk to a lawyer, because this new precedent applies in any state, and parents have this robust opt-out right, because the language that the court used was that parents have a right to direct the upbringing of their child, and that includes the religious upbringing of their child. And some of this classroom content can undermine their ability to do that. So we really, really hope to see schools comply, but we will have to see what happens.
For sure. Hey, Corey, you guys keep up the good work, and I hope everyone goes and takes advantage of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Corey Brewer, the Education Counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL. And as she said, you want these templates, go to will-law.org/parents. They've put it all together. All you have to do is, put your student's name and sign it. But great work, great stuff. And, you know, like I said, I don't think this controversial stuff should be even brought into the classroom. Kids are there to socialize with their peers and to learn. It's sad that we've gotten to this point, but I hope everyone takes advantage of this, sends that letter with their student. When this controversial stuff is in the curriculum. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. We'll be back after this. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. I don't know what I was about to say there. Happy to be with you on this Tuesday. You know, I wasn't going to mention this, but I just got a letter from a listener of my show here in Buffalo. So I know in St. Louis, you guys have the St. Louis. Oh my gosh, is it the Times Dispatch, Post Dispatch?
The Post Dispatch.
Post Dispatch, mm-hmm. Owned by the same individuals that own the Buffalo News, Lee Enterprises. And Lee Enterprises has just raised the price of the Buffalo News, and they're blaming tariffs for the increase of the price of the paper. Now, I'm sure a big city like St. Louis, your newspaper has a lot more pages. Our paper has become a 6-page insert that they don't even print in Buffalo anymore. They print it in Cleveland. They shut down the press here in Buffalo. It's sitting empty. They're hoping to put a soccer stadium there, but that's gotten shot down a few times. And now they're going to raise it even more. I mean, just paying for, what, yesterday's news, if you're lucky, most likely news that was big 2 days ago. I don't know. I don't know what the status of the paper is. I just know the company. And, here you're paying an increased price for a paper that leans one way. It's a paper that their media guy has taken shots at me a couple times now. And it's old news.
It feels like a deja vu, because I feel like we've had this same conversation multiple times with Mark about the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the increased prices. They yes. don't print here in St. Louis anymore.
Columbia,
Missouri. So that's what, probably an hour and a half, 2 hours away.
Home of Mizzou.
Yeah, the Mizzou Tigers. It's funny you mentioned that, because a lot of similar stuff is happening right here in St. Louis as we speak.
Wow. It's sad, because, you know, my first ever job was delivering, back when there were paper boys, I delivered the Buffalo News. That was my first paycheck. And when I delivered it, that's when Buffalo had two. They had the morning edition and the evening edition. I would deliver the evening edition after school. And almost everyone on the street got the paper. And if they didn't get the weekly paper, everyone got the Sunday paper. It was this huge.
Yes.
It had coupons. It was a huge paper. I'd put it to everything but the updated versions. You know, they would give you the inserts the night before, and it would just be spread over my parents' dining room and living room, all put together, ready for just the top paper to be put on it Sunday morning. And now, they have less than 35,000 subscribers in Buffalo, and they have maybe 20,000 digital subscribers. But it's sad. It's sad. And again, it's one way. You look at the viewpoints. There's no opposing viewpoint. It is it's a liberal mindset in the viewpoint section. We have a cartoonist here. I don't know if you guys saw this story. He drew a despicable cartoon about the floods in Texas, pretty much, blaming it on people who voted for Trump and saying, well, they voted for it. That's what they get. And of course, the Buffalo News stood by him. They didn't get rid of him. And this is not the first time he's drawn something despicable, a political cartoonist in 2025. So you know what? You made your bed. And that is surprising. They also don't print the paper in St. Louis, because I thought Buffalo was just getting the small town treatment, driving it from Cleveland.
Nope. Same here. Wow. And they're cutting costs. And I get the online version because, you know, of this job. But you can call. Here's what I've found out. You could call and say, yeah, I'm not doing that price increase. I'm going to cancel. And then they'll say, oh, you know what? We'll give you a better price. So you might want to try that in Buffalo.
That's a smart way to go, because what's worse is, you know, losing your subscriber base, which they do. Now, again, like I said, I also have, you know, a rift with them, because, I mean, I've been on the air here for 8 years and there's been four articles. One article. Now, this is a pride moment of mine, in the Sunday paper. And this tells you how far they've fallen off. Like I said, when I delivered the paper, every house got the Sunday paper. I was featured on the local page in the Sunday paper about 2 months ago over a tweet that I put out. That was news worthy of printing in the Buffalo News, a stupid tweet I put out to our county executive. And the media guy, who was my professor in school, wrote an article about how I didn't know what I was talking about. The best part about that article is he admitted that we get more listeners than they could ever dream of getting readers. Indirectly, wow. He admits that in the piece.
Good times.
Yeah, so, but that was in the Sunday paper. Now, again, if that was in the Sunday paper 15 years ago, my phone would have lit up. The only reason I knew that existed is because my wife's boss, the next day at work, referenced the article her husband was in. And my wife texted me, goes, did you know you were in the paper? Did you know you were in the paper yesterday? I said, no, I had no idea. No one at work told me. I'd been at work all day. No one here told me. It was her boss who had seen my name in the paper and told her.
Jeez.
So, you know what? I mean, when they moved it out to Cleveland, I think it was we knew it was only a matter of time. But now trying to blame tariffs for another increase for less news. Again, our paper here, it's mostly – you have like four local writers. Everything else is the New York Times, the Washington Post, and we all know how that leans. So I saw that come across my screen, someone emailing me about the email they had gotten earlier. And that's why I say radio, you know, as time goes on, what is always still here? It's always been radio since the invention of the radio. TV was going to ruin radio. Didn't happen. The internet's going to ruin radio. Nuh-uh. We have always been here. And we'll always be here, because we can be in your car, we can be on your smart speaker, we can be on your phone, and I truly believe this is the best media and the best way to communicate, and it does go through time. I mean, we adjust to the technology, and we'll always be here, and for that, I am forever grateful, and I'm so happy to be able to be on a media like this, where you have the freedom to give your opinions, you have the freedom to speak your mind. And again, if something breaks, we can bring it right into you. You don't have to wait 2 days for the newspaper. So interesting stuff going along. Tonight, Hard Knocks premieres on HBO. I know we talked about it a little bit last week. Hard Knocks premieres, the Buffalo Bills being featured. And that is my evening plan. I'm going to go home, put my son to bed, and make myself a sub and sit in front of the TV. And like I said yesterday, I'm not a big preseason fan. I don't usually follow training camp or any of this stuff. But I'm excited to see the spotlight on the Queen City here in Buffalo. And that is one thing I am looking forward to.
It's fun when they give it to good teams, too.
Because exactly.
There's been way too many seasons in the past where it's given to a team that just feels totally irrelevant. Excuse me. It's nice seeing a team the caliber of the Bills, who a lot of people are, you know, as you know, picking as their favorites for the Super Bowl this year. It's nice to see them following a team that's going to be a legitimate contender.
I just hope it's not a distraction as they get ready for this season, and looking forward to it. When we come back after the news here on 97.1 FM Talk.